Paul.
I want to remind people that in the HER2 negative population, one of the most elegantly demonstrated points of the upfront aromatase inhibitor trials was that visceral metastases respond extremely well in HER2 negative disease. And if the patient's asymptomatic with liver metastases, I only make this point because I'm aware that in clinical practice, there are many people who still revert to chemotherapy because a patient has 2 or 3 asymptomatic liver metastases. And I need to remind people that the response and benefit to aromatase inhibitors in that type of setting is excellent and should be tried. It's outside of the discussion we're having here.
I think it's pretty relevant to the discussion. Joe, how do you approach these patients, asymptomatic patients, metastatic disease? Do you start the patient on chemotherapy?
No, I agree with Paul entirely that endocrine therapy would be the default position. With regard to the HER2 issue, I would favor saving that single bullet in the chamber for a time when I need to use chemotherapy because of the clear benefit when trastuzumab is added to chemotherapy with regard to objective response, time to progression, and overall survival, and not use it at a point in time when I'm administering endocrine therapy where I think there's less potential for benefit and where I also have to tie the patient to getting a parenteral therapy in addition to an oral therapy that's well tolerated.
So you're saying endocrine therapy without trastuzumab?
Yes.
Mark?
Well, I mean, I think if you follow your patients very closely, as all of us do, then that would be on the table as a treatment option and would be available to discussion with the patient, particularly in light of the fact of its convenience, et cetera. But what we have to recognize from the tandem trial is the expectation from that single agent AI is modest in that the time of benefit is short for the vast majority of patients. And as long as you capture those early progressions in a timely fashion and treat them with trastuzumab-based therapy, which is arguably the most important of the targeted therapies that you're going to use in these patients, then that's fine. So close clinical follow-up is the key to management of these patients if you're not going to start with a trastuzumab-based regimen. Outside of that caveat, I think my preference would be to use the trastuzumab-based regimen up front. And I think I probably would start with an aromatase inhibitor in this particular case because of its lack of side effects relative to cytotoxic therapy. So I maybe have a little bit of a departure from John's point. The point there, however, is that we really don't have any data on what the response to chemo Herceptin is after endocrine trastuzumab combinations. And the data we do have of single-agent trastuzumab followed by chemotherapy, for example, some work done by Denise Yardley and Skip Burrows published a few years ago in the JCO suggests that when you introduce chemotherapy in trastuzumab-treated patients, you still maintain a very high response rate. I think they used a paclitaxel carboplatin addition to trastuzumab-treated metastatic breast cancers and had a response rate, I believe, about 65% even after trastuzumab. So if you extrapolate that into AI plus trastuzumab-treated patients, which is a leap of faith, I'll grant you, I think you might still be able to capture reasonable salvage responses with chemotrastuzumab following a run-in with endocrine therapy plus trastuzumab.
Let me just clarify, though. Asymptomatic patient with metastatic disease, Mark, are you saying you most likely would use an AI and trastuzumab?
I most likely would, yes. I think trastuzumab is the most important component of these patients' treatment because of its association with improved survival, albeit in combination with chemotherapy with the data we have, but I'll bet you in non-chemotherapy trials you would see the same thing. Trastuzumab is a very important component of targeted therapy for HER2-positive patients, and arguably more important than the endocrine manipulation in terms of its impact.
It's interesting you think about the quality of life implications of second opinions. Go to one doctor, you're going to get chemo. Another doctor, you're going to get hormones alone. Hormones and trastuzumab, pretty big difference in quality of life. Mara?
And very confusing for patients, you can imagine. But I agree with Mark. I mean, it would have been nice to have a trial of combination versus single-agent sequential therapy, but that's not how this study was designed, and we're not going to get the answer to that. The median went from 2.4 to 4.8 months. There was really a doubling of the median, and obviously some patients are going to derive most of that benefit, and others aren't going to derive any at all. And without being able to select those patients up front, I have come around to feel that I probably will give the combination of trastuzumab and an AI up front because I do know that some people will derive a great benefit and will be the ones on the tail of that curve. And until I know who those are and can select them when I'm starting therapy, I probably will give the combination initially. I also feel that giving hormonal therapy is very important. I like to delay chemotherapy as much as possible. I've had patients patients in my practice with metastatic disease for 8 to 10 years. And I think it's important to be able to delay the onset of chemotherapy because I think it has a big impact on quality of life.
I'm going to ask Eric to make the final comment.
I'll just be very clear about this. I didn't find the TANDEM study to be practice changing to any significant degree. Prior to TANDEM, I would use very selectively an AI in some patients. Prior to TANDEM, I would use selectively trastuzumab monotherapy in some patients. And most patients with HER2-positive disease in my clinical practice get some form of chemotherapy with trastuzumab for the reasons that have been described, and I will continue to do that. I suppose there may be a very rare patient for whom I might give the combination, but it's going to be a very, very rare patient. And most of those patients, I think I'll actually give an AI to alone still and then come in with chemotherapy and trastuzumab.
Okay. Neil, can I just make one comment on this? I tend to lean a bit more towards John in this, in that if you look at the, bearing in mind the caveat of doing cross-trial comparisons, the TTPs on most of the chemo plus trastuzumab regimens up front are of the order of about 11 months. On the carbo-taxol trastuzumab, it was about 14. On similarly, Mark, with yours, with I think the 006. On, I believe, Matt, the your trial on the letrozole trastuzumab, it was 5.8. And in TANDEM, I think it was also 5.8 in the ER positive centrally confirmed. If you're doing cross-trial comparisons, it's around 11, 12 versus of the order of 5.5. And I do believe you've got your best shot up front. So I would tend for those with visceral, symptomatic, or asymptomatic to start more with chemo trastuzumab. But for the ones with a bone pain or asymptomatic, those are the ones I'd consider much more towards an AI plus trastuzumab.